Ready to start paper 24. That's on old single column, page 264. All right, so here we have this series of papers on spirit origin beings. The first ones they're covering are this general category that we're going to be reading about tonight, the higher personalities of the infinite spirit. And, you know, they gave us the first one of that group of seven in their own paper, like we talked about. Solitary messengers were in the previous paper. So just like you went from paper 16 to paper 17, you know, where you had the master spirits treated separately, and then you went to the rest in the group, we're going to do the same thing here. And this is a really interesting group of beings. They're beings that you don't often, you know, consider in your sort of upfront thinking about who's out there and, you know, who's doing what. But you'll see right away when we start reading about the first group that there's all kinds of interesting stuff there that is worthy of beginning to be aware of and putting into your cosmology, into the picture of how you see, you know, yourself in relationship to what's going on. So let's jump in and see what we've got here.
Paper 24, Higher Personalities of the Infinite Spirit. On your verso, we divide all personalities and entities of the conjoint creator into three grand divisions: the higher personalities of the infinite spirit, the messenger host of space, and the ministering spirits of time. Those spirit beings who are concerned with teaching and ministering to the will creatures of the ascendant scheme of mortal progression. Those higher personalities of the infinite spirit that find mention in these narratives function throughout the grand universe in seven divisions. 1, solitary messengers. 2, universe circuit supervisors. 3, census directors. 4, personal aides of the infinite spirit. 5, associate inspectors. 6, assigned sentinels, and 7, graduate guides.
Okay, so let's just stop there for a second and just comment on a general thing that we all know happens all the time when you're reading this. You get a list of seven beings. And, you know, see, you know, just think about the way they said that. So those higher personalities of the infinite spirit that find mention in these narratives, you're going, well, okay, so it's probably just going to be some random number. But, of course, it's not. It's the same old number. It's seven, just like it always is. And why is that? Why is it that even when they're so vastly circumscribing what they're telling you and what they're allowed to tell you, why does it always come out seven all the time? Now, it's a hallmark of the way the revelation is constructed. I mean, they, in a holistic fashion, you know, these 2,000 pages present a depiction of reality that truth can flow through. If you had some bigger picture that they were revealing, you would, you know, in order for truth to flow through it, you would see the same thing where there would be, you know, these repeated patterns of completeness. You know, so even historically, humans have had the notion that seven was the number of completeness. You know, and it comes, you know, through the mists of revelations long forgotten, you know. That's why. I mean, it's not because they just, it's like, well, I don't know, who cares about, you know, the personal aides, you know, are completely irrelevant to them, but we got to put seven in the list, so let's just throw them in. You know, it's not like that. And you'll see, I picked them purposely, because when we get to them, you know, a few sections forward, it seems kind of curious on the surface. It's like, well, why did they even mention these beings? But the fact that they're there means that if you penetrate deep enough into the revelation, you're going to find a hole that would, you know, that wouldn't be filled if it weren't for them revealing the personal aids of the Infinite Spirit. You know, you can only penetrate so deep into infinity, but the depth to which they know you can penetrate, they've made sure that the picture will be complete, so that truth will flow through it. So that's why, it seems on the surface to be someone just, scheming to always, make the number seven, because they like that number. But it has to be seven, or there would be a divot in the revelation. No matter how much you can't see it initially, it would be there. I can say that with a lot of certitude because I've begun to discover this very fact, that you start to penetrate and you're putting a picture together and you're going, okay, wait a minute, there's a being that has to fill this role. Oh, that's that unrevealed, quote-unquote, being that they mentioned in paper 30, say. They gave me a name, even though they couldn't say much about it, because they knew I would find, this missing puzzle piece in my picture, and so that it's all there. There's no missing puzzle pieces, the extent to which we can plumb the depths of it. And it's complete. It's always going to be seven to achieve that completeness. That's why it's like that. All right, so it's especially noticeable here because, like they said, there are the number of orders of beings that are the offspring of the Infinite Spirit is beyond your comprehension, let alone the number of beings. Just the number of different types, is completely beyond your imagination. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking, no, but see, it's the seven, they're giving us sort of that first level. Anything beyond that we couldn't comprehend anyway. But that first level has seven. All right.
Solitary messengers, circuit supervisors, census directors, and the personal aides are characterized by the possession of tremendous endowments of anti-gravity. The solitary messengers are without known general headquarters. They roam the universe of universes. The universe circuit supervisors and the census directors maintain headquarters on the capitals of the super universes. The personal aides of the Infinite Spirit are stationed on the central Isle of Light. The associate inspectors and the assigned sentinels are respectively stationed on the capitals of the local universes and on the capitals of their component systems. The graduate guides are resident in the Havona universe and function on all its billion worlds. Most of these higher personalities have stations in the local universes, but they are not organically attached to the administrations of the evolutionary realms.
Okay, just one little quick thing, since we haven't mentioned it for a while. That anti-gravity comment, let's just remind ourselves what that means and how that's often in play when you're talking about offspring of the third source and center. Fundamentally, how can it be, by anti-gravity, they mean anti-absolute gravity. They mean something is able to transcend the absolute gravity of the Isle of Paradise. Something is above the absolute level. So just literally, if you know all the levels, you know what that implies. You're not talking about infinite facts here. So there's only one other option. There's two things above the absolute. The infinite's one of them, but there's something in between the absolute and the infinite level, the co-infinite. Right? That anti-gravity, be it be material, or spiritual gravity or personality gravity, whatever it is, that anti-gravity manifestation is possible because you have a co-infinite source. The infinite Mother Spirit is the co-infinite upholder. Okay? So, the offspring can acquire that nature from the originator.
And so, referring to physical gravity here,
right? So, yeah, here they're basically referring to physical gravity. Yeah, we talked about that with the solitary messengers. That is why they, can so navigate at such high speeds. Travel at such high speeds. so that's telling you these other three are going to get from point A to point B really fast too if they want to. Okay. But just remind yourself of that. The same way, to emphasize the most profound expression of anti-gravity, you're talking about the Father's personality gravity. That can be superseded by something. That the absolute difference between the two personalities in front of me here, those personalities are absolutely unique. So they're absolutely separated. If all there was absoluteness for a ceiling, there is no way those two persons could ever know of each other's existence. Something above, something trans-absolute, has to link those two things together. This distinction is vital. Okay? Through the individuality of the whole, those two persons can be linked together. Because there's co-infinite nature that can go above that absolute wall that divides them as absolutely unique personalities. The mother can go over the top of the father's absolute wall. And so that reminds you something just again about what aspect of the father is putting that in place. It's not the infinite aspect of the father, it's the father absolute that's behind that personality bestowal. That's as high as it goes. Okay, so just keep in mind that there has to be some literal way that you can understand logically how these things can be, and it's almost never mentioned, that idea of the co-infinite. But if you think about it, you've got to bring it in very early on to understand how this can be possible, that there can be anti-gravity. It has to be something trans-absolute. All right, so just giving a little overview there.
Of the seven classes composing this group, only the solitary messengers and perhaps the personal aides range the universe of universes. Solitary messengers are encountered from paradise outward, through the Havona circuits to the superuniverse capitals, and thence out through the sectors and local universes with their subdivisions, and even to the inhabited worlds. Although solitary messengers belong to the higher personalities of the infinite spirit, their origin, nature, and service have been discussed in the preceding paper.
Okay, so, it's like we said, we've already gone through that. But notice that they're already giving you, a hint that they're not going to be able to tell you much about the personal aides. They're not even really sure about, how much they, they range. How far and wide do they range?
One, the universe circuit supervisors. The vast power currents of space and the currents of spirit energy, circuits of spirit's energy may seem to operate automatically. It may appear to function without let or hindrance, but such is not the case. All these stupendous systems of energy are under control. They are subject to intelligent supervision. Universe circuit supervisors are concerned not with the realms of purely physical or material energy, the domain of the universe power directors, but with the circuits of relative spiritual energy and with those modified circuits which are essential to the maintenance of both the highly developed spiritual beings and the Marantia or transition type of intelligent creatures. The supervisors do not give origin to circuits of energy and superessence of divinity, but in general they have to do with all higher spirit circuits of time and eternity and with all relative spirit circuits concerned in the administration of the component parts of the grand universe. They direct and manipulate all such spirit energy circuits outside the Isle of Paradise.
Okay, so a lot of the meat is really to be unpacked just in this first paragraph. So let's take a little time, make sure we understand what's going on. You can see right up front what we're talking about. You know, as we mentioned so often, you can think of there being two substances. Matter, you know, as a substance, material substance, and spirit as a substance, spirit substance. So you have these two substances. So you have two group, general groups of beings that supervise those two substances, those two flavors of energy. Okay, you have the universe power directors, which means, you know, that's the general category name for the supreme power directors, the supreme centers, and the master physical controllers. So you have all those power beings that take care of the, you know, the physical energy or the material energy. And then you have these guys, these circuit supervisors, and as we'll see, a lot of beings that they don't reveal associated with them, that handle spirit, you know, substance, spirit as a, you know, just as an energy. You know, not as, you know, as bodies per se or anything like, you know, but just like, you know, like the universe power directors handle that energy. So it's just energy, matter of fact, energy handling it. Does everyone know that kind of expression that's not too common, let or hindrance, you know, to stop or delay, you know? So, you know, it's without stop or delay, you know, it's just, it's freely, seems to be freely going, but it's not automatic. It's just masterfully controlled. So an awful lot like, you know, what you see with the universe power directors. Now let's dig into all these kind of curious statements that they have in here. Okay, so they're the purely physical, that's the universe power directors. So what kind of, you know, when you say spiritual energy, what exactly are they handling? So when you get in there, you see, they say they don't handle the purely physical, but the circuits of relative spiritual energy. Okay, so now, why the word relative? Okay, because we're not talking about things like the spirit presence of the absolute spirit, of the eternal sun. We're not talking about that that spirit gravity basic, you know, basically phenomenon. Those sorts of high order things that are being handled directly by the eternal sun or such facts. Okay, we're talking about spirit energy that's going to come into relationship with individuality. We're not going to be talking about just pure unity for its own sake phenomena. We're talking about this unity substance, the spirit substance, that is going to be brought into relationship with individuality. That's the relative. Okay, that's what they mean by relative. And you can see that in the going, and with those modified circuits, which are essential to the maintenance of both the highly developed spiritual beings and the Marantia or transition type of intelligent creatures. So just all the things that are coming down and engaging individuality or individuals. Okay? Yeah?
Well, so, you know, I'm using the word circuit, and I'm trying to understand mm-hmm. or picture mm-hmm. the concept here. So these spiritual energies, they obviously then run... They flow in a, whether it's a path or something, they're not just all over the place because they're controlled through circuitry somehow.
Yeah, there's two ways they use that word circuit. One, very literally, like you would think when you hear the word circuit, like, okay, I must have a wire somewhere and something flowing through a wire or something, okay. And yes, that you'll see that's, you can definitely observe spirit energy phenomena that are very channeled like that. You know, they're along paths. However, in more ubiquitous terms, they will still use that word of things being circuited. Like, for instance, you talk about the agitant mind spirits. Okay, that mind energy is a ubiquitous presence throughout all of Nebadon. Okay, so there's not just a wire of that mind energy. You can plug into it anywhere because it fills all of space. But the way it functions is circuit-like, in that at whatever point you are in space, that mind energy engages you, flows through you, you know, and back into the mother. It's not, nothing is being broken off and handed to you. Okay, so you're encircuited in that fashion. So, you know, her energy is coursing through you. It's just you have to let go of trying to make it, you know, just located here and not over here. It's everywhere.
Different than other energy circuits. Remember they talk about other parts about beings that have to control the heavy energy circuits that come around
and around. And you're going to see that. You're going to see that here, too. See, so there is that. There is things where there it's definitely along this line and not along that line. Okay, but there's also things that are ubiquitous, but they're functioning where, you know, there's something here that this energy is going to engage, and so it, you know, loops into it. It engages it, it encircuits it. Okay.
Kind of like your cell phone picks it up no matter where you are.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, two different things, but it's the key is that we're talking about things where this unity substance, this spirit energy, is going to be brought down and rubber is going to meet the road. You know, you're going to put it into action with individuality, you know, or literally with material energy. Okay, and then there's a really fascinating statement they have here. So the supervisors do not give origin. Okay, so they're not going to, you know, not the originators. They're just going to, like they said at the end, they're going to direct and manipulate. But look at the wording there. Okay, they do not give origin to circuits of energy and super essence of divinity. What on earth does that mean? Okay.
Super essence.
Okay. You know, we're talking about spirit substance here. Okay. And on the one hand, you know, as in the general sense of the word energy, you can think of it as spiritual energy. It's another flavor of energy. Now, what do you mean by that? When you use the word energy, you mean there's a differential in play. You mean that in some way, this phenomenon is different at point A and point B. You know, there's a differential. It's not uniform. Like, for instance, the force charge of space doesn't have any differential in it. That's why it's not called an energy. It's called a force. Okay? You can't. There's no kind way you can build electrodes and put one here and one here and get anything to flow through a circuit with a force. Because it's the same everywhere, okay? But when you're talking about an energy, that means there's a differential. An automaton is an energy because it's here and not there. So you could imagine an electrode, you know, one thing pokes on the automaton and one doesn't, and okay, there's a differential across those two probes. There's an energy there. So on the one hand, you can think of it as an energy. There's going to be differentials. It could power something. It could, you know, it could make something happen. What on earth, okay, super, and they say another way to think about spirit substance is the super essence of divinity. Okay. There are a number of ways you can think about that. Let's just do the way they're wanting you to initially understand that statement. From the individuality viewpoint, from the perspective of the seven absolutes of infinity. Okay, so now you remember one of the seven absolutes of infinity, you know, those seven absolute anchors of the individuality viewpoint. One of them is the deity absolute, okay? Which, you know, in a simple fashion, you can think of as the reservoir of the potential for spirit substance. Okay, so let's think about that. That association I just made there. I call the deity absolute, I also say is the reservoir of the potential for spirit substance. The deity absolute. Okay. Now, the word divinity is in here. Okay. What's the relationship between the word deity and the word divinity? You know, they basically explain up in the first section of the foreword.
I think of divinity as deity-like.
Right. Exactly. Divinity is deity-likeness. Okay. So, you know, if from the unity viewpoint, if you flip the deity absolute around and look at things from the unity viewpoint, from the deity viewpoint, it's the infinite potential, or more immediately, if he's in the absolute level, it's the absolute potential. Okay? But, you know, we're not looking at, we're looking at it from the individuality viewpoint. So we have this fact called the deity absolute, and the word deity is there. So obviously there's, if you're going to think about something coming from a reservoir you're calling the deity absolute, it's going to have deity likeness. It's one way you could think about what it, you know, what's going to come from there. Okay. Now, in the sense of just that potential, you know, so it's the reservoir of potential. As that potential, from the individuality viewpoint, that's what you really are flipping around in the unity viewpoint and seeing as a facet of deity instead of a reservoir, okay, from the individuality viewpoint. Okay, so that potential is very much, you know, like this word divinity, you know, deity-like. Now, you could also see the expression in the Urantia book, the essence of divinity. And there you're just, you know, you're just thinking about the quality of divinity, the essence of it, okay? And, you know, think about, you know, something we often bring up when we're talking about unity. You know, we bring up the word values, and we say the value of life is its progressibility. The value of life is its progressibility, ability. Okay, potential. See, the value is a potential. So you see how that. If you're just talking about the essence of divinity, you're talking about that, you know, the quality, that deity likeness, and things like that statement. The value of life is its progressibility, that potential to progress. Okay. What if we go above and beyond that thought? What if we go above essence to super essence? Okay, what would we be thinking about? Well, from the individuality viewpoint, here we have this reservoir of potential. If I go up and beyond, I'm actualizing that potential. See, if I take it out of that potentiality, where, you know, that's something that you can only call a reality if you have a paradise sort of viewpoint, and there's no difference between potential and actual. For us, it's, you know, it's not something you can get your hands on. It's just a potential. What if you actually take that potential from the individuality viewpoint and actualize it, go up out of that reservoir of potential and actualize it? You'll have a super essence of divinity. You'll have spirit substance. So, you know, the deity absolute, you can think of as a reservoir of the potential for spirit substance. You actualize that, that super essence is spirit substance. So it's another way of thinking about the relationship between spirit as a substance and deity and divinity. You notice that there's a very close connection, see? And that makes sense. I mean, when you say God is spirit, you know, there's got to be some really close connection between spirit and deity and personalized deity, God. Well, what's the fundamental quality of deity? Unity. And what is spirit substance? It's the unity substance. See, it's unity made substance. It's literally what it is. It's unity made substance. You know, taken out of what, from an individuality viewpoint, is just a potential. Okay. It's taken out of that sort of, you know, within the deity itself. And you know, so it's taken kind of from the inner life of deity and put into the outer life, above and beyond. Okay? There's a substance in the outer life called spirit substance. You know, if you take unity out of the inner life of deity and put it out there, in the cosmos, it's a substance called spirit substance. That's what that's talking about. All right. It's a once word. I mean, there's only one time when they use that super essence. All right. Let's see. And then, you see that they are working not just the time but eternity as well, because they're going to be doing things in the central universe. All right. you know, and with all relative spirit circuits concerned with the administration of the component parts of the grand universe. Now there's the word relative again, but notice it's different now. By relative, we mean you have parts of the grand universe. You know, so you know it's relative to this super universe, or it's relative to this local universe. That's what they mean by relative there. It's relative circuits as opposed to relative spiritual energy. All right, so that's, you know, you can see that they're just in that first paragraph, they're really trying to get you to kind of think through all of the basic details and have some idea, if you can penetrate the fog there, of what this substance is called spirit substance that these beings called universe circuit supervisors are going to be playing with. Because we all have a pretty immediate thought of, okay, power beings are playing with, you know, matter and energy and maybe some sub-electronic level energies that we're not immediately familiar with, but they're very closely related to the energies, physical energies we are familiar with. So, you know, that's a much more immediate thing to imagine. But you've got to really expand your thinking to try to figure out what on earth it is that these beings are doing. And if you can, you really have two substances now. And the at the same time, we're talking about sort of this, you know, this unity-made substance. Who's the creator of these beings? The Infinite Spirit. One way you can think about what the Infinite Spirit is, take the infinite, just the infinite. The Infinite Spirit is the infinite made spirit. The Infinite Spirit itself, that fact, that concept, is not unlike what we're talking about here about spirit substance. Okay, so it's all connected, and you know you can go even beyond that when you start getting into total deity and looking at the bigger. You can understand this in even more ways what they're getting at there. But that's the basic idea. To try to see if you can stretch your mind to imagine a substance, you know, that's this quality of deity made substance, divinity made substance in a sense.
So these are beings that actually control and manipulate these circuits.
Yeah.
And you were just describing in a way, not so much that function, but the circuits themselves or what they're really controlling and
yeah.
What depth the, of those or you know how intricate they are or different they are.
And so
it's
you,
really almost hard to fathom.
Exactly. So from our perspective, it's like, wow, they're doing something really subtle that I can't even really appreciate. You know, for us, spirit is non-existent. We can't touch it in any way. We can't stub our toe on it. But for them, it's just as solid as this, and they can grab a hold of it and shove it over there and do, you know, whatever. All right? You can build buildings out of spirit bricks and, you know, and whatnot. It's a substance.
And yet you were saying there are certain spirit things that they don't.
Yeah,
that
so,
aren't,
so
that are out of their purview.
The things that aren't directly meant, you know, trying to reach down and engage matter.
To actualize.
The stuff that's sort of the ceiling. The unity ceiling, they're not dealing with that. That's the infinite, or the eternal sun's domain. Yes, that spirit presence, that spirit gravity.
Now you can start to suspect that there's a whole physics with this.
Right. See, there is. That's the whole point. You know, the word physics can you know be expanded. There's a whole set of laws, a whole domain of laws about this other substance. It follows just as many laws as the physical substance. And they have to conform to those laws. There's nothing magical, even though you've got something that seems pretty magic-like, that you the super essence of divinity sounds like it doesn't have any laws that should be, you know, but no, it's just as law-bound as this stuff. Okay, so let's get a little more details and see how they relate to the power beings.
Universe circuit supervisors are the exclusive creation of the Infinite Spirit, and they function solely as the agents of the conjoint actor. They are personalized for service in the following four orders. 1, Supreme Circuit Supervisors. 2, Associate Circuit Supervisors. 3, Secondary Circuit Supervisors. 4, Tertiary circuit supervisors.
Okay, just it's all just factual. Just notice how careful they are. I want you to just start picking this up. Notice how in one first they say the Infinite Spirit, then they say the conjoint actor. Why did they switch names?
Well,
You know, like we were just saying, and in terms of their nature, think of that as being very intimately tied to the infinite spirit, you know, that aspect of the third source and center that you call the infinite spirit. But obviously, the moment they say the conjoint actor, you know, and they function solely as agents of the conjoint actor, before you read the next sentence, you go, oh, they must be persons. Because, you know, to say the conjoint actor means the third source and center has a personality. And sure enough, they are personalized. Right, is the next thing they say. See, so that's why they switched names there. So, you know, they're being brought into existence, you know, in some likeness of the infinite spirit, but they're persons, and so they are agents of that that absolute person, you know, the conjoint actor. All right.
The supreme supervisors of Havona and the associate supervisors of the seven super-universes are of completed numbers. No more of these orders are being created. The supreme supervisors are seven in number and are stationed on the pilot worlds of the seven Havona circuits. The circuits of the seven super-universes are in charge of a marvelous group of seven associate supervisors who maintain headquarters on the seven paradise spheres of the infinite spirit, the worlds of the seven supreme executives. From here, they supervise and direct the circuits of the super universes of space.
Okay. So, even though we haven't gotten to paper 29 yet, let's just remind ourselves. So, with the power beings, with the universe power directors, at the top of that whole hierarchy of beings are seven beings, the seven supreme power directors. Now, those seven beings at the top of that hierarchy, you know, they're stationed around the periphery of the aisle. In other words, they're aligned with the division of everything into seven super universes. Okay, that sevenfold individuation. The seven beings that are at the top of this hierarchy are not, you know, they don't go around the circumference when you lay them out. Okay, they're spread out radially. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on the seven circuits of Havona. Okay, is physical energy and spiritual energy, are those two energies independent of each other? Yes, you can see it right in the what's the foundation of these two groups of beings. They're orthogonal.
Yep.
They're independent of each other. Okay, the one is this going around this way to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and the other is right angles to that to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, these are independent substances. They're basically oil and water, okay? But there is something that brings them into association. What is that? What energy associates physical energy and spiritual energy?
Mind.
Mind energy, right. Right, okay? So they are independent. They are orthogonal substances in and of themselves, but there is, again, this phenomenon that's going to bridge the two. Okay, but now notice you drop down to the next notch. So you start, and remember all of Havona is transcendent of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the seven super universes. So the first step here in going from the supreme circuit supervisors down to the associate supervisors is to bring it down into the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 super universe level, that they are around the spirit, you know, worlds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, okay? So the connection between the supreme and the associates is a downstepping process of bringing something that's transcendent of the seven super universes to something that then gets divided up into that sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. The seven super universes. See, that is a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. But it starts out transcendent to that. Okay, that's sevenfold individuation. Okay, so that's what you can see, you know, between the lines of that of what they're telling you about.
So these circuits that they supervise and direct, these are spiritual circuits.
Yes, so spirit energy circuits. Yeah. Or spirit energy that gets encircuited, maybe, you know, even to say it more generally. All right.
On these paradise spheres of the spirit, the seven associate circuit supervisors and the first order of the supreme power centers effect a liaison which, under the direction of the supreme executives, results in the sub-paradise coordination of all material and spiritual circuits passing out to the seven super-universes.
Okay. See, so with the universe power directors, you drop down one notch from the seven supreme power directors on around the periphery of paradise. And you have seven beings on the seven worlds of the supreme executives again, on the seven worlds of the spirit. So that so spirit and matter controllers are there together and in liaison. So this bridging of the gap begins there. So, you know, when you think about that liaison, you know, at what is the literal expression in energy terms of the liaison? It's going to be mind energy is going to be the super additive consequence of that liaison. Okay. Now, what mind? And that's a question we'll get to in a little bit. But it's obviously going to be something that in general terms we're going to have to call, we can't call it spiritual energy, can't call it physical energy. It's the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two. It's going to be called mind energy. Okay? This, you know, they give birth through this liaison to another energy fact. Let's see. You know, and notice again, see, it's all sub-paradise, like they like we were saying up front. It's this relative stuff, the stuff that's, you know, actually going to be engaging individuality. And, of course, it's doing it right here. You're bringing unity and individuality substances into liaison. All right? You know.
On the headquarters worlds of each super universe are stationed the secondary supervisors for the local universes of time and space. The major and minor sectors are administrative divisions of the super governments, but are not concerned in these matters of spirit energy supervision. I do not know how many secondary circuit supervisors there are in the Grand Universe, but on Uversa, there are 84,691 of these beings. Secondary supervisors are being created right along. From time to time, they appear in groups of 70 on the worlds of the supreme executives. We obtain them on requisition as we arrange for the establishment of separate circuits of spirit energy and liaison power to the newly evolving universes of our jurisdiction.
Okay. So that last statement there. See, they're thinking about organizing a local universe, and they've got to plug it in. You know, there's the spirit energy, and then, you know, there's also the physical energy, see, in liaison, the liaison power. Both of those things are getting circuited, but we're not talking, you know, directly about the power beings right now. We're talking, you know, they're focusing on this on the circuit supervisors, the spirit energy ones. So when they're ready to get a local universe, you know, up and rolling, they've got to bring out the beings to plug it in. Okay, so thinking about that process. See, what's between the lines? Apparently, you've just been given an interesting little tidbit. When all is built out in the super universe of Orvinton, how many local universes will there be? Local universes.
700,000.
In Orvinton.
Oh.
100,000. There'll be 100,000 local universes in Orvinton when it's all built out. Right now, we're up to 84,691. They just told you how many local universes are up and running in Orvinton.
They gave you a status report.
Yeah.
Almost 85%.
All right, so, you know, you have, let's see, so you have You take 100,000 minus 84,691.
15,000.
You got 15,309 left. Yes. That's how many you have to go yet. So that's an interesting little tidbit that they threw in. Have to keep that in mind. Maybe that'll be useful at some point.
That was 70 or 80 years ago, right? Or something like that.
Well, you'll see that difference is irrelevant. That's how many there are right now. Okay.
Big deal, right?
Local universes aren't quite like rabbits.
Yeah. it might be 692.
Okay, ready? So just see, they didn't come around and say that, but just put two and two together. They've just told you how many local universes. Now,
it's the same when you do the number of Michael.
Right, there's that. Right, we'll mention that in a little bit here. Yeah.
So their comment about being created right along means they're adding because we're
still right. So the infinite spirit, on a regular basis, and of course you're seeing the some multiple of. Some multiple of 10 times 7, like we saw so many times with the previous beings, it's 7,000 or 700,000 or whatever, here we have 70 in each creative act. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, and what was the other thing I was going to mention there? I just lost my train of thought.
70 doesn't divide
it. Yeah. Oh, shoot, now I forgot. Oh, well, let's just go forward. I can't remember what I was going to say there.
Keep reading
them? Yeah, so read a little bit more here.
A tertiary circuit supervisor functions on the headquarters world of every local universe. This order, like the secondary supervisors, is of continuous creation, being created in groups of 700. They are assigned to the local universes by the Ancients of Days.
Okay, so you see a tertiary circuit supervisor. So you have a fairly straightforward system that they're picturing here. You have, on Universa, you've got one for each local universe, and on the headquarters of each local universe, you have one. So you have this one-to-one link, this grid, this energy grid, the sort of the overarching grid that they're setting up is, seems to be a lot more straightforward than with the physical energy grid. There's all kinds of complexity. But that would make sense. This is the unity substance, not the individuality substance. It's bound to be more straightforward to manage on the higher levels. It's only going to get more complicated when you get down closer to individuality with this relativity. But at the highest levels, it's going to be kind of unity-like. It may just take one being, and that's what you see, to do it here, and anchors it in a local universe, one being to anchor it in the super universe. So it's very unity-like. All right. And what else we got here, then?
Circuit supervisors are created for their specific tasks, and they eternally serve in the groups of their original assignment. They are not rotated in service and hence make an age-long study of the problems found in the realms of their original assignment. For example, tertiary circuit supervisor number 572,842 has functioned on Salvington since the early concept of your local universe, and he is a member of the personal staff of Michael of Nebadon.
There's a number again. So now we know when they set up the local universe of Nebadon, that was number 572,842 in the series. That's, how many had been built at the point when they got Nebadon up and going. And you notice that's a different number than our Michael's number, 611,121. See, so that's telling you that you've got some independence here, and that makes sense. Remember when we've talked a little bit about
independent what? Michaels or independent?
I'll explain in a second here what I mean by that. That you have two processes. The one process is all the power beings and these spirit, you know, energy beings, they're all working on getting things set up independent of Creator Sons. They're just, you know, getting the universe organized. And then a Creator Son looks out in the grand universe and says, well, let's see, I think I'm supposed to go to Super Universe number 3, and I think out in Super Universe number 3, I think that local universe is where I want to set up shop. See, so that bit about them picking, see, is independent of this. And so, but you notice the numbers aren't radically different. It's not like this is 3 and he's 600,000. Okay. They're, you know, obviously it's going to be roughly in the same ballpark, but they're not the same number because of there's a degree of independence of those two processes. He's picking, you know, from the ones that are have been prepared. Okay, so, but we now have another interesting little tidbit of a number. We know, how far along we are in the process, at least when Ebedon was created.
So from the time, remember when they say, I think paper 16, whatever it is, 985 billion years ago, they thought this part of space would be right. Then it was like 400 billion years before Michael came.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere between then and there, this guy showed up?
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, it's at 300 billion.
You're reading ahead, John.
I wasn't reading ahead at all.
But he's thinking ahead. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're obviously going in that direction to when everyone went out to Salvington, when Salvington was built, and Michael and crew could go out there, and this guy obviously was very shortly out there with him.
But
yeah,
you
that
think
was.
He was after or before?
Probably coincident. You know, I mean, the power beings, go out. So,
yeah, sure.
I would think these circuit supervisors do too. It's probably basically coincident. And they can get there really fast. So, all right, so let's get a little more here.
Whether acting in the local or higher universes, circuit supervisors direct all concerned as to the proper circuits to employ for the transmission of all spirit messages and for the transit of all personalities. In their work of circuit supervision, these efficient beings utilize all agencies, forces, and personalities in the universe of universes. They employ the unrevealed high spirit personalities of circuit control and are ably assisted by numerous staffs composed of personalities of the infinite spirit. It is they who would isolate an evolutionary world if its planetary prince should rebel against the Universal Father and his vicegerent son. They are able to throw any world out of certain universe circuits of the higher spiritual order, but they cannot annul the material circuits of the power directors.
Currents
of the power directors.
And they keep switching back and forth on you between currents and circuits. Yes. Just because it starts with a C. Okay, so. And here's where, you're being challenged to think about this a little bit more clearly, about this whole bit about communication lines and transit lines, and beings are locking onto these, circuits and going from point A to point B and all this sort of stuff, or communicating between point A and point B, the universe broadcasts and all that. A lot of times we just refer to the power beings, the universe power directors, when we're thinking about that they lay lines of energy and all that. That's only half the story. Okay? Right here, they're pointing out that it's a liaison phenomenon. You have both these ones that are handling the spirit energy working on laying out a line, and the power beings laying out a line, and they're lined up. Okay? So it's a liaison line that they're laying out. And that we know with the when you're talking about the power beings, that that isn't just at the level of the centers. You have the master physical controllers that bring that grid all the way down to lower levels. Well, with the spirit energy, you have those beings too, but they're unrevealed. They're just mentioned here. The unrevealed high spirit personalities of circuit control, There's another spot where they refer to them. When you're in the Planetary Princes paper, which is what paper is? Paper, paper 50, and towards the end of section 2, it talks about the roving commissions of conciliators. Remember, you know, like the executioner, that group. You know, talk about them in the next paper. The roving commissions of conciliators serve and supplement the planetary tribunals, and both spirit and physical controllers are subject to the findings of these conciliators. So another way to talk about those high spirit personalities of circuit control is just to call them spirit controllers, like you call them physical controllers on the other side. Okay, and they're referring to both of them there. And the executioner can order both of them around. So there's really no limits, see? both spirit energy and physical energy can be wielded in any way that the executioner desires. So that's an interesting little tidbit. So don't think that you can take refuge in spirit energy and be safe. No spirit fortress is going to protect you. You can pile up as many spirit bricks as you want, and you're not going to win.
So how do you think they isolate the...
So that's what we're going to... So now think a little bit more about these communication lines. I mean, the transit lines are same effective thing. These lines that are being laid out, you have spirit energy and physical energy. So there's that, and that liaison, which we think of as mind energy. Okay, for instance, when Andon and Fonta achieve will dignity, and they say, it was an eventful day on Urantia when our small group gathered about the planetary pole of space communication and received the first message from Salvington over the newly established mind circuit of the planet.
Mind being.
Well, but that's it. The circuit is literally a mind energy circuit. Okay, so you think about when you're on the first mansion world, you're going to begin to start communicating mindily. All these beings are interacting mindily. They're not jiggling air molecules and wobbling eardrums around.
You can't think bad things about
them. Okay, we're putting thought messages, if you want to use the analogy of jiggling air molecules, you have this mind energy that's ubiquitous, in the presence of the creative mother spirit, and you're just oscillating that, quote unquote, between the two minds and communicating. Yeah. That's the medium through which, you're communicating with each other.
Chris, yeah? I think you have to direct the thought for them to hear it.
Or yes.
They can't just read your mind.
High beings can read your mind, but, communication is a communication.
Okay.
They're not going to hear anything unless you say something.
I was just going to ask you, Chris, if that was how Jesus knew what people were thinking without speech.
I mean, you have a son of God. You got a greater son there. There's all kinds of possibilities there for knowledge. Okay. This is the normal mode of communication. So just think about if that's the way you normally communicate, is mindily, and you're going to set up a communication network, you're going to make that network in the image of your experience. Okay, it's going to be, to connect point A to point B, you need some mindal energy to send the message through. So you lay out a line of mind energy. Okay, but it's not, there isn't some being that has a hold of mind energy and puts it out in a line. It's a super additive consequence of laying out a spirit energy line and a physical energy line, and then you have the super additive consequence of the relationship between them is a mindal energy phenomenon that a mind can communicate through to another mind.
So during the times of Andon and Fonta, we were not decoupled from the circuit.
Right. And so, to answer your question, and they tell you that these are the beings that close the circuit. So how does this work? I mean, the physical controllers can keep their physical line there. These guys just take the spirit line away, and now there's no super additive consequence. There is no mind energy that a message can go through.
Or spirit.
Okay.
Your bandwidth has really been chopped.
Okay. So it's just they take the ceiling off of the conduit, and so there's no conduct. You know, there's no conduit that message can rattle around between the walls of. You know, between the floor and the ceiling of. Okay. The ceiling is taken off by these guys.
And that's what happens when a planet is isolated.
Yeah, that's how they isolate it. So, and like they said, but they cannot annul the material circuits of the power directors. The power directors can still have things circuited.
That's why they had.
But you can't use it for communication anymore because there isn't a lid on it.
Not a mind circuit.
Right, right, so there's no mind circuit. You can't send a communication through it anymore.
That's why they had to come here to do this.
So we have the thought adjuster that is a fragment of God that is within us, and that's a circuit.
Interesting.
And so if that, so we're not cut off from God, but we're cut off from this.
Remember, we have nothing to do with these circuits. These are for planetary ministers and stuff. No mortals have anything to do with any of these circuits.
But the circuits would come to our planet.
Yeah, but not to us.
Our world.
Mortals have no connection to these circuits. There's no way we'll ever know if they're plugged in or unplugged or anything. Okay. But the planetary administrators that are used to, you know, listening to the broadcasts, like Adam and Eve when they arrived and they couldn't listen because we weren't plugged in. Okay, that's a problem for them because they're used to getting direction from their supervisors. And they don't handle themselves well on their own. None of that stuff has. Remember, there's a spot in the book where they purposely say point blank, there's no human phenomenon, no matter how oddball it is, no matter how quote unquote psychic it is or anything, that has anything whatsoever to do with these circuits. No human ever will have anything to do with these circuits, and never has. Okay, and how it's like one way that you really know that. Without even finding that sentence in the book, everyone remembers that even when you get to the mansion worlds and you have a mirage of mind and everything, you still can't hear anything from these circuits. Just on your own, you have to have what?
A harp.
You have to have a harp. You have to have that mirage contrivance, you know, that'll plug you in. Okay, you can't hear it even with that. That's sophisticated of a nature, okay? The stuff is way above, you know, our connectivity.
Okay. Does this have anything to do with playing a harp when you get up? Well,
it's called the harp of God because, you know, they're drawing from the Bible. You know, they're pointing out that passage in the Bible actually has, you know, a basis in the fact, in fact, you know, in that vision, you know, that Marantia contrivance was visualized, you know, and given that name in the subsequently in the Bible.
Okay, wait, before you go on.
Yep.
So the circuits that are surrounding the energy that we can tap into, that's just a lower type energy, the mindo energy that we can tap into, like of the infinite spirit.
In what ways are you encircuited?
What?
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, you're encircuited with the adjutant minds, the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, right.
That's just at this lower level.
No, don't think of it as so much as necessarily lower. Different. It's just different.
It's distinct, yeah.
It's distinct. You're designed to plug into the adjutant energy. Mm-hmm. You're not designed to plug into this energy. It's just the way we're built. Okay? So it's not so much that it's, you know, necessarily higher or lower. You know, it's just different. You know, you're not designed to plug into it. Now, obviously, from an animal perspective, it's higher. Okay, if you think about it in that sense, then definitely you could use the word higher. But, I mean, to say it's higher than the Spirit of Truth, you see, that doesn't make sense. See, so it doesn't, you know, make sense to talk about it that way. See, so, yeah.
And,
yep.
Well, she was saying that the Father, the Adjuster, is a circuit, and I never thought of it like that.
Well, okay, the adjusters are connected to their source. They're They're fragments of the Father. They're fragments of the facet of deity that's part of the Father called the Infinite Upholder. And they maintain that linkage, you know, because of its likeness. So there's the Father knows of them, you know, because they are connected to them. They're encircled in Him.
Okay, so we still have the fragment in us, but okay. It's still connected to the main source.
Okay, but in terms of the relationship of the adjuster to you, the adjuster doesn't need to be encircled into you. The adjuster is in your mind. See, so that whole picture of a circuit, it's like, well, something's here and something's over here, and a circuit's going to take it from point A to point B. It's like, no, there's no distance to travel. I mean, the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth are not in your mind. They're above your mind, so there has to be some sort of, you know, circuit-like linkage between the two. But the adjuster is literally in your mind, so there's no wires needed. You know?
Remember when you used to say about the cord that you could, if you go insane or something, you break this cord?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you repeat that?
Do you remember that? Well, I mean, if you cut your tie to the cosmos, then you go cosmically insane. Basically, that tie to the cosmos is that you're encircled in the Holy Spirit. That linkage between you and the Holy Spirit, that encirclement, you can snip that with your free will. Okay, and then you become unplugged from the cosmos. You're cosmically insane. That's, you know, see, so that's the wire that you're cutting there, is that encirclement in the Holy Spirit. You know, and that you can proceed then to take it further, and you, you know, the adjutants are encircled in you. You can start to cut those wires. You know, you can so disrupt your mind that the seventh adjutant can't see itself anymore, and so you cut that wire, quote unquote, etc. Okay. But,
so all right. The main purpose of cutting the circuits in the, you know, during the rebellion time was to protect them.
Right. You know? So it's
in other words, to keep our bad information going backwards, so to speak.
Right. You don't want to pollute. It's right. A pollution thing. Yeah. You know, just don't want to pollute the outside of the system.
Keep the crosstalk out.
But it would have to go through the dark gravity bodies. It wouldn't be able to.
No, I mean,
the energy can't go through that, or our
waves. No. Remember, we're just talking about isolating our system.
Yeah.
Okay, from like this neighboring system.
The constellation was protected.
Not going all the way.
No. We're just way down here in the trenches. Yeah. Okay. So now you have a little bit more sophisticated understanding. It isn't as simple as just a, you know, master physical controller laying a thing and you jiggle that, you know. It's a complicated system where these two groups of beings have to, you know, work in perfect harmony here and synchronize these, laying out these two lines of energy, and then it works in the liaison between the two.
I've never seen it that way.
Okay.
The universe circuit supervisors have something of the same relationship to spirit circuits that the universe power directors have to material circuits. The two orders are complemental, together having the oversight of all spirit and of all material circuits that are controllable and manipulatable by creatures. The circuit supervisors exercise certain oversight of those mind circuits which are spirit-associated, much as the power directors have certain jurisdiction over those phases of mind which are physical energy-associated, mechanical mind. In general, the functions of each order are explained by liaison with the other, but the circuits of pure mind are subject to the supervision of neither. Neither are the two orders coordinate. In all their manifold labors of the universe, circuit supervisors are subject to the seven supreme power directors and their subordinates.
Okay, so there's a number of little things that I'll step through one at a time. Okay, so that first thing, we know that we're talking about, normally we're talking about mind. We have adjutant mind, and then we have pre-adjutant mind is the way we think of it from our perspective, or just mechanical mind, you're talking about plants and everything. Okay, okay, they maybe in the middle there first, so just to set it aside. But the circuits of pure mind are subject to the supervision of neither. Okay, so like the adjutants, for instance, or the Maranja mind, or the kind of mind that angels use, seraphim use. Okay, those mind circuits, that's the creative mother spirits. She's in control of them. Okay, so not the spirit controllers or the physical controllers are dealing with that. But there's mind on the two boundaries. You have spirit energy, and physical energy on the boundaries. There's the whole stuff in between that the creative mother spirit is doing, but the boundary stuff is actually being handled by these power beings. The stuff that's on the physical boundary, the mechanical mind, is being handled by the power beings. You know, most specifically, the mechanical controllers are controlling mechanical mind. Okay, and they're telling you there's a similar parallel phenomenon here, where you've got a kind of mind that's, you know, the equivalent of mechanical mind, that it's not really involved in the being sort of stuff in the full sense. It's the boundary condition phenomenon. So you can imagine, well, like maybe there's entities, you know, that need to be minded. And the creative mother spirit is not handling that herself. These spirit controllers would be handling their mindedness, just like the mechanical controllers handle minding plants, you know, giving plants mechanical mind. She doesn't handle that. But the other thing is just in the context we were just talking, see, when they say they have certain oversight of those mind circuits. Well, we were just talking about a mind circuit, these communication lines, for instance. And they have over control over that, oversight. I mean, who turns the circuit off? They do. And so that's another way of thinking about the kind of mind energy that you're communicating through. It's this spirit analog of mechanical mind. You know, it's really the kind of mind that's sort of glued to the surface of the spirit energy that they're laying out. Okay? And we know that the kind of physical energy that the power beings are laying out is sub-electronic stuff, see? So it's very rarefied stuff. It's stuff that's closer to spirit than this stuff. See, so it's a small gap between the two plates of this, okay? And that gap is filled by this, basically the mind that's glued to the spirit side, you know, more directly. So it's mechanical-like, and it's being used in a mechanical-like fashion as a way to communicate or travel. See? That's what they're talking about. That kind of mind that is really above and beyond what is directly part of the consciousness of any being. Just like mechanical mind is below the consciousness of any being. Okay? So that's the kind of mind energy that we're dealing with, and they're in charge of that kind of mind energy, so they're in charge of the circuits and cutting them off. However, in all their manifold labors, the universe circuit supervisors are subject to the seven supreme power directors and their subordinates. So that's kind of interesting. So even though a lot of times you think of spirit as being above matter or above physical energy, okay. Now what about the beings at the top of the hierarchies of the spirit energy controllers and the physical energy controllers would allow you to just deduce what they just told you there. The highest spirit controllers are in Havona. The highest physical energy controllers are where? On the aisle. Higher. See? So they're going to take precedence. So that's, remember, you can, because everything is literal and direct. I mean, you can deduce something like that by just the fact that, you know, one group hierarchy is higher than the top of the other hierarchy, so you know what the pecking order is, okay? You know who's going to be ultimately in charge. It's going to be the seven supreme power directors. You know, and they're right there with the seven master spirits. So even though you have with this spirit energy, you have some things that are transcendent of the sevenfold individuation of the seven master spirits, Bottom line, the seven master spirits are still going to be in charge. It's like, well, but how can that make sense? I mean, you know, if they're really above the seven master spirits, how can the seven master spirits be in charge? Remember, there's actually eight things, not just seven things? Yeah. Right. The super additive consequence of the relationship between the seven master spirits is the sevenfold spirit, you know, which is above them, okay, which is all the way around. See, so in the whole picture, it all comes together. That sevenfold spirit is going to have some intimacy with this stuff that's transcendent to the sevenfold individuation. So in the bottom line, it is the seven master spirits about which this all ultimately revolves. All right.
While the circuit supervisors are entirely alike within their representative orders, they are all distinct individuals.
Yeah, it's just respective orders.
They are truly personal beings, but they possess a type of other than father endowed personality not encountered in any other type of creature in all universal existence.
Okay, so they're third source personalities, just like the power beings are third source personalities. And, you know, if you've thought about third source personality, you're starting to notice something. Unlike with first source personality, where it's there's a high degree of one size fits all to personality. There's just two types. There's creator personality and creature personality, and that's the only distinction. It looks like there's many, many flavors of third source personality, and they're just vaguely alluding to it occasionally. The kind of third source personality the creative mother spirit has, remember they mentioned it's very unique, and here you're saying it again. So it almost seems like it's almost very tailored. There may not, you know, be much in common at all. It may be, no size fits all. You know, that the third source personality gets very tailored to this group of being, gets this kind of personality, this type of being gets this kind of personality, et cetera, et cetera. So that's an interesting thing about the difference between the infinite spirit bestowing personality and the universal father.
Do you think we'll ever become... developed enough to distinguish those?
Oh, yeah. You'll be able to, but you can, they tell you that you can definitely engage them, even though they're third source personalities and you're a first source personality. They have something in common, personality. But, you know, you will definitely appreciate the difference. I mean, by the time you leave the local universe and you can personally recognize the creative mother spirit, you're going to appreciate the difference between her third source personality and other first source personalities that you have met. I mean, what it is, I can't tell you, of course, but yeah, you'll definitely be able to distinguish it. And maybe just one other thing I could say there is, why, even though they're first and third source, why is there a commonality? I mean, if you think about sort of a causal sequence, you know, where did third source personality come from? Well, before there was first source personality and third source personality, there was just the reservoir of all will, the infinite one. And sort of the first thing that you did is you scooped all of the third source personality out of that and put it in a separate reservoir, the infinite spirit. You know, and what's left is the first source personality now. Let's see, it used to be all together as one when you think about it like that. So obviously it has something in common. You know, it's just been split into two pools. And the third person hands out one kind and the first person hands out the other kind. Matter of fact, they tell you the third person even sometimes hands out the first person's kind. He takes an individuation of will, a personality, hands it to the third person, and the third person actually bestows it. So, that's all back when you read about the infinite spirit in that paper. All right.
Although you will recognize and know them as you journey inward towards paradise, you will have no personal relations with them. They are circuit supervisors, and they attend strictly and efficiently to their business. They deal solely with those personalities and entities having the oversight of those activities which are concerned with the circuits subject to their supervision.
Okay, so very matter of fact. But see, although you will recognize and know them, see, yeah, there is that personal connection.
Yep.
All right, well, why don't you?
That should be your drinking buddy. Or...
no. Why don't you? Yeah, let's get some more here.
Two, the census directors. Notwithstanding that the cosmic mind of the universal intelligence is cognizant of the presence and whereabouts of all thinking creatures, there is operative in the universe of universes an independent method of keeping count of all will creatures.
Okay, and notice the capital U, capital I there, the universal intelligence, just coining another name for the third person in this regard. And so there is a cognizance of every individual mindal self. But there's a separate cognizance of every volitional being, creature of will dignity. Yeah. An individual who is exercising will in the circuit of the Father, the volitional absolute. These are the census directors. So they can keep tabs on will creatures in distinction from just creatures, you know, like a dog, say. Okay. But there is someone who knows, you know, how many insects there are in the grand universe and how, you know, et cetera. Okay. But right. But just how many will creatures are there? These beings are keeping track of that.
The census directors are a special and completed creation of the infinite spirit, and they exist in numbers unknown to us. They are so created as to be able to maintain perfect synchrony with the reflectivity technique of the super universes, while at the same time they are personally sensitive and responsive to intelligent will. These directors, by a not fully understood technique, are made immediately aware of the birth of will in any part of the grand universe. They are, therefore, always competent to give us the number, nature, and whereabouts of all will creatures in any part of the central creation and the seven super universes. But they do not function on paradise. There is no need for them there. On paradise, knowledge is inherent. The deities know all things.
All right, that's pretty obvious. And see, that's kind of related to you're asking me about the Creator Son, or you were. Someone was asking me, but you know, the Creator Son's a different question when you're talking about God. Okay, but as we read this, I just remembered what I was going to say a while back. So here again, they say they exist in numbers unknown to us. You notice they said that about the previous guys. That's what I was going to mention. You know, they told you. You know, this is a divine counselor in our super universe, so he knows how many local universes are up and running, and he can give you the exact number, 84,691. But he's, you know, they're just assigned to this super universe. They actually don't know about the other six. So, and that's why he says somewhere there, I was going to point that out now, I do not know how many secondary circuit supervisors there are in the grand universe. See? Okay. So you always have this, you know, they're very circumscribed. And so that shows you how matter of fact these beings are too, the divine counselors are. They have a certain job and they're not interested in stuff that doesn't directly concern them. Okay.
They just didn't want to take the time to look at it.
Or maybe he can. Maybe that's a crosstalk that's not allowed. Remember we talked about that. There's a lot of things that are kept separate because it would short circuit the evolutionary process. So, you know.
So when it says they're aware of the birth of will in any part of the universe.
Yeah.
So when a will creature is born, is that what that
no,
means?
No, we're going to talk about, let's just hold on to that for a little bit. We're going to get to the dead. But you notice that they're already, yeah, they're getting you interested there. But let's hold off on that until we get a little bit further down. Yeah, let's go ahead.
Seven census directors operate in Havona, one being stationed on the pilot world of each Havona circuit. Excepting these seven and the reserves of the order on the paradise worlds of the spirit, all census directors function under the jurisdiction of the Ancients of Days.
See, I'll jump ahead here and point out. See, you've got the ones on the pilot world of each of them on a circuit, so you know the number there, 7. But the unknown, see, obviously, when he says he doesn't know, is the reserves. He doesn't know how many reserves are. As you'll see, the other ones he knows the exact numbers of. So the mystery, the question mark in the numbers is in that reserve number there.
Right. One census director presides at the headquarters of each superuniverse, while subject to such a chief director are thousands upon thousands, one on the capital of every local universe. All personalities of this order are equal, excepting those on the Havona pilot worlds and the 7 superuniverse chiefs.
So there's 14 that are different, and then the rest are the same.
In the 7th superuniverse, there are 100,000 census directors. This number consists entirely of those assignable to local universes. It does not include the personal staff of Usatia, the superuniverse chief of all the Orvantan directors. Usatia, like the other superuniverse chiefs, is not directly attuned to the registration of intelligent will. He is solely attuned to his subordinates stationed in the Orvantan universes. Thus, he acts as a magnificent totaling personality for their reports coming in from the capitals of the local creations.
So you can see why he's different. Describing how he's different. Then maybe I just mention here. You see, they're using the letter U again, just like U versa, U major, U minor. You know, just that same U. I've got to figure out what the etymology of that one is, what the SAT part is tied to. But so they're using a name for him. You know that he's the 21st letter of the alphabet U. He's 7 times 3. You know, it's this 7th expression of the threefoldness. We're in the 7th superuniverse.
You're one hell of a mathematician.
So who's... It's like the name. What's the name of the one in the first superuniverse?
Name of what?
C-Satia. Right? ABC. You know, it's the third. It's just the letter. Okay. But you see... so he knows there's 100,000 in each superuniverse, and then there's some given number of staff, too, here, which they're not telling. It's obviously the big question mark is the reserves, is why he doesn't know how many there are in total. All right, so you got this little system set up where you've got the 100,000 ones that are totaling all the ones in their local universe, and then they send the total up to Usatia, and he gets a grand total.
Or notice they say assignable, as opposed to...
Right, because
not all assigned.
We have 84,691 is all we have now. Right.
From time to time, the official recorders of Uversa place on their records the status of the superuniverse as it is indicated by the registrations in and upon the personality of Usatia. Such census data is indigenous to the superuniverses. These reports are transmitted neither to Havona nor to Paradise.
Okay, so that's if you don't send it to Havona, there's no way it can get over to another superuniverse, for instance.
Yeah. See? So Usatia is because it's satiated. can you imagine?
You know,
every single will creature coming in from every...
He's probably not going to stop and gab with you.
Right? He's got a big number in his head.
The census directors are concerned with human beings, as with other will creatures, only to the extent of recording the fact of will function. They are not concerned with the records of your life and its doings. They are not in any sense recording personalities. The census director of Nebadon, number 81,412 of Orvantan, now stationed on Salvington, is at this very moment personally conscious and aware of your living presence here on your rancho, and he will afford the records confirmation of your death the moment you cease to function as a will creature.
Okay, now, and I'm still going to hold it off.
That number's different again.
Well, yeah, okay. I'm going to hold off that last part until the next paragraph, you know, the question is you brought up. Let's deal with the other fascinating thing there, another number. Okay, so now we know when they got Nebadon up and going, it was 81,412. Okay, and we know when that was 300 billion years ago. So in the last 300 billion years, we've gone from 81,412 to 84,691.
Ooh, we have some data.
We got another data point. Let's 84,691. Whoops.
If I
84,691. If I can punch the keys correctly, minus 81,412. 3,279 local universes have gone online in the last 300 billion years. So that's kind of interesting. We can calculate how often. Right. Yeah. So let's see here. So if we take that times 3, we'll get 91 million years of one local universe every 91 million years. Correct? Yeah, 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
That's a slow process.
Right. Yeah. So now you could ask a question. If that's the average time from one to the next, what was that other number we had? We had 100,000 minus 84,691. We have 15,309 left. Okay. Times that is about 1.4 trillion years, if it keeps on at that pace, to get the rest of them up and going. You know, not to get them deep into light and life or anything, of course, you know, but that, you know, it gives you a way of kind of estimating how much longer it'll take, assuming that there's some, you know, uniformity to this.
Which, from the standpoint of the ancients of days, is 1/300.
Right.
Existence.
Right. So that's just kind of an interesting little back of the envelope calculation, 1.4 trillion years.
And you go backwards.
To get the rest spun up.
How long did it take to get to here?
Oh yeah, I didn't think about checking it. We do know that there's another spot they tell you how, you know, when they got the super universe up and going. That was 300 trillion years ago. So.
Oh, you could check the rate.
Yeah, so we could. Yeah, I could check this. Yeah, that's a good point. I'll do that. Okay, but anyway, that's enough. That's enough numbers in the middle.
Sounds like we're accelerating.
How do we know that there's just one local universe at a time?
We don't. I'm just saying, just an average.
Just working on numbers.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Just an average, just a back of the envelope average calculation to get.
It could be 10 of them, 100 million years, and then.
Yeah.
A billion years before the next.
I mean, you know that inhabited worlds are episodic in a local system. It's about 200 in a block, and then there's hundreds of millions of years in between the next group of about 200. You know, so that's episodic. That's not on a constant rate, but. Anyway, just an interesting number to see if it makes any sense at all.
My life is a flash.
All right, so now let's get this next paragraph.
Census directors register the existence of a new will creature when the first act of will is performed. They indicate the death of a will creature when the last act of a will takes place. The partial emergence of will observed in the reactions of certain of the higher animals does not belong to the domain of the census directors. They keep count of nothing but bona fide will creatures, and they are responsive to nothing but will function. Exactly how they register the function of will, we do not know.
Okay.
I have a question.
Oh, yeah, there's a million questions here. Okay, so...
We got to get
demonstration. It's like, how do they know when the last act of will is the last act and not The second to the last act.
Last act is the last act. Okay. The basic answer to that question is, does it appear that they have a fairly objective vantage point from which they're viewing things? Yeah, very objective vantage point. Okay, so now, remember, see, they're giving you, this is one of the spots in the book where they're reminding you of some of these technical details. That every time I bring them up, it's very, very problematic. Okay, but we're going to do it again anyway, because they just did. Okay, so when the first act of will is performed, okay, see, they're very careful in what they're saying there. Okay, personality is individuated will. You got the reservoir of the will, the father breaks off a chunk, you know, and doles it out. Okay, but where is the father? Is he in time? No. Okay, so that will was individuated before time began. You know, that the potential that is that personality has been waiting from past eternity. Okay, and but there's a point in time when there's an adequately developed self that the seventh adjutant can engage it, which instantly gets that seven adjutant-minded self encircuited in the Holy Spirit. So there's a capacity for a personality to engage. Okay? At that point, that personality that's from outside of space and time in its origin identifies into space and time and begins to exercise. That will, which is a potential, begins to exercise as volition. It becomes a volitional being. Okay? When, you know, so all that happens instantaneously when the seventh adjutant engages that self. At roughly what age does that occur? Roughly age six. Okay? So they register that moment when there's a mind of will dignity, when it becomes a volitional being as an independent phenomenon. So they know at, you know, around age six when that happened. They registered
don't
that.
Don't they teach us the time of the first moral decision?
Right. And that you know, you can't make a moral decision if you don't have the second cosmic intuition, the moral discrimination. And that's in the Holy Spirit. See? Yeah. See, I mean, and again, remember that it's when they talk about that moral decision, that's sort of just kind of a an easy way to think about it. We're talking, you know, speaking more technically here. I mean, there's a moral element to the mind the moment that you're encircled in the Holy Spirit. And the decisions in the mind have a moral quality to them, no matter how slight, the moment that you're encircled in the Holy Spirit. The thought of right and wrong enters the child's mind when you're encircled in the Holy Spirit. So decisions can have that concept attached to them, right and wrong. Okay, but so that's what they're registering. You know, not your material birth. They're measuring when you become a mind of will dignity. And of course, backing off, the same thing. The moment you cease to be a mind of will dignity. Well, now, if it's a straightforward thing, if someone just chops your head off, okay, boom, it all collapses, and okay, you cease to be a mind of will dignity right at that point. Okay? But remember, you know, when they talk about death, there's spiritual death, there's intellectual death, there's physical death. Especially when they talk about that intellectual death in contrast to spiritual death, you know, that's where they talk about reversing this process. You know, you have the first adjutant, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and then this happens, you get recorded. Well, same thing, if something happens, either you so twist the mind that the seventh adjutant, you know, can't hold on anymore, or you're beginning to slowly die, and one by one, they you come unplugged from the adjutants. The moment the seventh adjutant comes unplugged, you know, then they register that that moment. You know, it might be 20 years before you physically die, but the moment the seventh adjutant comes unplugged, it's not a mind of will dignity anymore, and they record that moment.
Like the person that has dementia?
Or whatever, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, but however, aren't you, you know, when you get resurrected, aren't you a mind of will dignity again?
Yes.
So this is only for the material life you're talking about here.
Well.
Because you don't get, I mean, you then, are you then re...
They know when you're repersonalized too.
Okay, so it's in every life you do. So.
Right, they're just noticing when there's something flowing in the Father's volitional circuit or not.
Even when you become a spirit being.
So yeah. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. 170 incarnations.
Like they pointed out, and with other will creatures, it's not just human beings.
Right. So once you leave Nebadon, then maybe another guy picks you up.
Right, I mean, you notice there's a whole network here. They are keeping track of everyone in the central universe and everything. They're keeping track of every will creature. Yeah, so no matter where they are.
So it's a consciousizing of your will.
And technically, you know, they're saying registering will, but, you know, more precisely, what are they registering? They're registering volition.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not there's something flowing in the Father's personality circuit. Okay.
So when would the last act of will take place? When you're talking what John just said about it going, you know, up into the mansion worlds. And
well, if you choose eternity at some point, there is no, you know, like that
you're
last act.
All the time.
So they'd be always on.
But the you know, the moment someone chooses iniquity and you know and you know, how does that work? Remember, the process is you have a heart, you have a temple within. First thing you do is you empty all the contents out of that. You totally devalue the whole domain of the temple, and the adjuster copies that, evacuates the soul, so your soul's an empty shell now. But there's still a temple. The last act to become finally, you know, fully iniquitous is to choose to evaporate the walls of the temple. Okay, and the moment the temple's gone, there's nothing for no place for the personality to engage, and it ceases to be a mind of well dignity, and
Are you
perceiving
of the temple as different from the soul?
Yes. The temple, you know, the easiest way we visualize it is in the hourglass analogy. You know, it's the upper domain of the hourglass. It's the domain that's of the six levels of meaning that's established by the three cosmic intuitions. The fourth, fifth, and sixth levels of meaning make the volume of that temple within, the heart. That, you know, and Lucifer has a temple within. We have a temple. Every being has a temple within. The last act of Lucifer will be to eliminate the temple.
So, Chris, if someone is like a sociopath who has no care or concern about good or evil, if they already chose it.
Well, I mean, we've talked about that we can use those words psychopath and sociopath better than the current psychologists do. The technical thing you're looking for is a redefined use of the word psychopath. I mean, that means soul disease. See, that means, in this picture, that you are no longer encircuited in the Holy Spirit. You don't have moral consciousness. You have soul disease.
So they've chosen iniquity already then?
Right, see, that indicates that you're, you know, if there's two ways. I mean, they could be such that they never got up to a human level. But let's say they got up to a human level, and now you engage them and you test them and you figure out this person has no concept of right and wrong. Okay, well, you know they've gone down below. They're not human anymore. They've unplugged from the cosmos. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The gang leader who goes to church.
And so that moment that they unplugged, that got registered. You know, when Lucifer finally, you know, snips that final cord, it'll get registered.
What I think the point he's trying to make is when you actually die, let's just use that, and your personality, they say they really don't know where it goes, but your will stops at that particular time. When you're resurrected,
the volition stops. Right.
So you know he picks you up again, so to speak, as being registered. Okay. So you don't. It's not so much, and it's really nothing more than just keeping track of it.
Right.
It has no bearing on
right.
your survival or
right. It's very much like what the archangels are doing in that same situation. Remember, they can observe volition too, the patterns of volition. You know, and right now the archangels have a very precise record of your volitional pattern. Okay, and so when you are resurrected in the first mansion world, they step in and observe the volitional pattern and testify that that volitional pattern, which is absolutely unique, is exactly the same one that was there on the mortal world. You know, in the same way, these people, you know, these individuals are seeing that same pattern functioning again and record that fact. Okay?
Why do they need to do this?
Good question.
Is it to make us feel like somebody is acknowledging that we're a will creature? But we don't know, so that's probably not it.
That's the unanswered question here, yeah, see. I mean, you know why the archangels do that, basically. That's so that, you know, no one can say that Pam wasn't resurrected. You know, no, Pam was resurrected. You know, they testified to it.
It is Pam.
Yeah, it is Pam, the same Pam. Okay,
but
see, they don't explain that. Why? You know, right up front, they said that there is operative in the universe of universes an independent method of keeping count of all will creatures. Why? They don't tell you. You're left to just begin to speculate and wonder about on that. Yeah, that's the big unanswered question here. Well, I mean.
Why do they take censuses here? Because they can use the information to make decisions, to do things, and you never know.
Right. I mean, obviously, it's something like that, but specifically, I don't know.
They set up an elaborate system to keep track of it.
Right, down to the individual. And this is think about how dynamic a number this is. You know, how many people are just dying every second on this planet, or being born every second on this planet,
Maybe if we see, you know, patterns and see where they plug into another pattern, maybe we can predict more about how it flows.
They're letting you just begin to speculate on it. Now, there's one other thing we've got to mention here real quickly before we read that last little paragraph. This is a point where they remind you of something that I always try to help you with. The partial emergence of will observed in the reactions of certain of the higher animals, no less, they say, does not belong to the domain of the census directors. What in the world are they talking about there? I thought animals didn't have will. Why are they using the word will tied to animals, even if they're higher animals? What's an example of a higher animal?
A
3-year-old.
Oh, okay.
A 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, a dolphin or whatever. Okay, but
they have will.
Right, they don't have individual will of their own. I mean, we've talked about this. You know, when we say, well, wait a minute, you're saying that a person isn't a creature of will until roughly age 6? I mean, I'm pretty sure that I was sensing something of a high quality that I'm going to call personal before that. Well, they're reminding you, yes, there is such a thing, but it's not that person's personality that's, you know, that there's, it's not his purposing or her purposing. Whose purposing is guiding that animal?
The mother.
Creative Mother Spirit. Remember, that she's a special kind of third source personality, just like we mentioned. Her special third source personality nature is she can engage an individual that's going to be a first source personality at roughly age 6 and guide them as if they already had that purposing, the subtle little bit that needs to be there. And then when the father's personality identifies, she steps away and there's no gap. It's a seamless thing. That's the will they're talking about. It's her will. And the fun thing they're bringing in there is, you know, not just thinking about pre-humans, those kind of higher animals, but just higher animals. Why is it that higher animals especially are so anthropomorphizable, like a horse? There is a will. It's not the horse's will, though. It's her will. Right. You know, I mean, it's her mind. All animals are her. To observe any animal is to observe her thoughts. And in a big picture, her will. It is her will that animals do what they do. It's not the animal's will, but it's her will. That's the will they're talking about. Okay, so yeah, just one thing to appreciate before we go on. I mean, there's a why question. Okay, that all these higher animal stuff that does not belong to the domain of the census directors. Why not? Why aren't they totaling that too? Well, you don't need a census director. I can do that total for you. The answer is one.
Right.
There's one will, the creative Mother Spirit's will. Okay, so I can count the number of super universes. Okay, that's super. There's one, next super universe. There's two. I mean, I know that number. It's 84,691 in Orvindon. How many wills are there? That's how many creative Mother Spirits there are. That's, see, you don't need a fancy census director to do that count. That's an easy count. Okay, one will per super universe to handle all the animals and all the pre-humans.
Is it super universe?
Or local universe. Local universe if I said super. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
These beings always have been and always will be census directors. They would be comparatively useless in any other division of universe labor. But they are infallible in function. They never default. Neither do they falsify. And notwithstanding their marvelous powers and unbelievable prerogatives, they are persons. They have recognizable spirit presence and form.
So, like marvelous powers, and that's that anti-gravity. So here's a being, you know, that has, unlike a solitary messenger, you know, that doesn't have recognizable form. They have form and this anti-gravity. You know, and these, you know, unbelievable prerogatives. I mean, it's like, good grief. You know, how do they do this? How do they total this? How do they keep track of this incredibly dynamic thing with will, you know, minds of will dignity flashing in and out at an incredible rate? That they do. Those are unbelievable prerogatives.
They must have such loyalty to God that they continue to do the same thing forever.
Doesn't it sound machine-like?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no. See, they are persons.
Amazing.
Yeah. Right. And is that a demonstration of loyalty or not? Yeah. It's just an amazing. See, when you think about it, you know, something that can be so machine-like and yet be so personal. It's like the loyalty that's, you know, the duty. You know, you're talking about moral decisions. I mean, talk about a relationship to the level of duty. You know, and always have been and always will be. It's just for all eternity, this is what they do. Count.
Something in their nature that's like what they keep track of.
Of course.
And that's how they can be that and right. Do that.
They are supremely happy.
Yeah.
Because they're doing exactly what their nature is. Yeah. That's a very important to remember. It's something that we don't have any familiarity with. Our personality is not a heck of a lot like ourself to start with. There's a big difference. But their self and their personality are one. There's no tension there. Yeah. So, and there's choice. So it's not just joy that they experience. It's happiness. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a moment here.